Satisfaction guaranteed. Keep your family safe and save money at the same time. Go to GulfCoastWindows.com. That's GulfCoastWindows.com.
Stand by. Cue announcer.
The Del Olalea Show. Weekday mornings from 10 to noon. ESPN 97.5. Presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Sounds a little weird, but it's familiar. Hello and welcome aboard. Yes, the Paul Gallant Show. I am, in case you didn't know, Paul Gallant, and this is the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Obviously, Joe shared the news with you guys last week. Joe's going to be stepping away from the show. He's still going to be at the station, so this isn't one of those things that I'm all too familiar with where some radio guy gets taken out back, you know? It's not any of that. But Joe's going to be in the building. Joe does so much here, guys. I don't think enough people appreciate the very many things that he does. I'm thankful that we are going to still have him here. Obviously, we're thinking about his family and everything that they're going through right now. Also, it's also strange because I see him through this window behind Sean because he is doing work behind the scenes. It's just very funny to see it. But we're changing things back to what it was a year ago, where it was just me after Vanessa left. And that means we hear more from you. 713-780-3776 to call, to text, on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 975. It is the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. We've also got Sean Mapes behind the glass. Sean, how are you? Another shakeup. Always fun when we have them here. How's it going?
Good, good. Yes, another shakeup. Somehow, with all the shakeups, still you and I, Paul.
It's all it's ever been.
Through it all.
Same as it ever was.
Yes. Dell asked me about the timeline of Paul Gallant show versus other shows, and I was like, I think it was Vanessa and Gallant, Paul Gallant, Gallant George, Paul Gallant again.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
I was like, do we sneak in another one somewhere in there? But no, just those changes.
I don't think I've ever had a show last longer than 2 years. I'm not kidding. And obviously a lot of different circumstances. Sometimes I've gotten canned. Other times a host has left or a host has been taken out back. It's been weird.
Yeah.
It's been weird. But here we are on this Monday. I am barely alive. I took off 5 days, guys. I am a part of the poultry auction committee. I am a rookie on this committee as part of the Houston Rodeo. And Wednesday night through yesterday, the amount of libations that I consumed would put many weaker men, not as tough as me, down. I mean, I was straight poisoning myself for the last few days. Anything that happened in the world of sports, total blur. Figured out about all of it yesterday. And by yesterday, I mean this morning at 2 a.m. because after a very long day that featured me taking down a rodeo tent, getting hit by something in the head, I don't know what it was. It was metal. I might have a concussion. But I got home and I woke up at 2 a.m. in the morning and I figured out everything that's gone down over essentially the last 5 to 6 days, NFL Combine, more Astros at spring training. And I want to talk about the big thing everyone's talking about at the Astros in spring training. It's Jose Altuve. He's in left field. The Houston Chronicle has a 16-paragraph story talking about two plays to Jose Altuve in left field. I love it. This is so funny. This kind of coverage is all that anyone cares about in spring training. And we got a 16-paragraph story at the Chronicle from Matt Kawahara detailing literally two plays by Jose Altuve. One where he made a nice catch on the warning track against the fence, and the other where he did not have the best throw to home. It was a throwing error. 16 paragraphs to describe it all. I got to give Matt Kawahara credit. the way that he paints the picture of something that we really don't have that much access to see, because most of spring training baseball, it's not on TV, so you're not getting the best camera work out there. He painted a picture. It was an incredible picture. And guess what, guys? We really don't know whether or not we trust Altuve in left field. What we do know is it's going to happen a lot. Because today, Joe Espada was asked about Altuve in left field. Here's what he had to say. If we commit to left field with Altuve, the plan is, quote, he'll get more starts there in left field than second base during the regular season. Moving Altuve back and forth is something that they want to avoid. And here's really where Espada said everything that we've thought is possible, but probably didn't expect to follow through on. Joe Espada, quote, right now the plan is for Altuve to play the majority of his games in left field. Majority. So what's actually happening? It's so strange to think of. And I know that we've had conversations before about, hey, I mean, how is Altuve as a second baseman these days? I'm not going to go so far as to say that the guy's a disaster out there, but I do think that some of the things that were once routine for him are no longer that. In left field, will he be better? Will the Astros be better off for it? I don't know, but it's happening. And I guess they will move him back and forth a little bit. They're going to have him play second base a couple of games this spring. We'll see what happens there. I don't think that there's really any way that they go back, barring some sort of injury. But even then, the injury seems like it would make it more likely that Altuve plays more games in left field. Espada said, plans with Altuve can still change. Quote, it's really early in the process, and I don't want to commit to any of this without getting Altuve's feedback and seeing how this continues to develop. I wonder what Altuve's feedback is. Here's Altuve weighing in on his two defensive plays yesterday after the game.
I was kind of like a deep fly ball right on the fence, but made a great play. Yeah, good to be the first one. Yeah.
What was the read like and the break? Did it feel? How did it feel?
Yeah, kind of like saw the ball going high, and I'm like, okay, that's going back, and then I saw the wall. I saw the ball, and like, okay, it's gonna be interesting to see. So I got it, and then I hit the wall. But it was a great play, great read, and excited about it. Want to get more. What's up?
Did you catch it? It was kind of from a vantage point to tell if it was near the going over or not.
Yeah, like I said, I saw the ball. I saw the fence. I know it. They were getting close to each other. And in the last second, I was like, oh, my God, I got to catch it. So it was like, boom, boom.
What did they say in the bullpen there? It looked like you.
Yeah, they were cheering for me. They were really happy. They were helping me, too, saying, you get a room and all the stuff. And so it was great. I'm really happy about it.
How about that? He's happy. He's really happy. Do you not believe him? He's happy. You could see it. There's a little gleam in his eye. He's just got that spark about him because he's out there playing left field. He's excited about this. I really don't know how it's going to go down. I do think it's really funny that we are focusing so hard on Altuve in left field, doing a job that I would say is probably easier than playing second base. You know, at second, you got to have quick reaction. You got to make quick decisions. As an outfielder, pretty basic stuff.
Well, also, Friday was his first game playing in left field. It was happening during the show with Joe on Friday.
Okay.
The game started right at 12. And as we kept kind of refreshing, I had a window open watching the broadcast on some streaming platform.
Okay.
Altuve literally did not have a ball hit his way in 6 innings.
Damn. Imagine being the person that's in charge of tracking this, or you're Matt Kawahara.
Yeah.
And you know that eventually you're going to have to fill a lot of material in the paper writing about what Altuve did out there, and nothing happened.
One of the games, the first game in left. Nothing happened. Mm. And so that does speak to maybe why they moved him out there, is that you might have a game not where you literally don't get a fly ball to left field,
mm-hmm.
but that maybe there's only a couple plays that are both pretty routine, and you kind of steal a game of not having to worry about who's playing left field or not having to worry about a defensive liability out there.
I hope he's going to do better than that throw. I do hope that he does better. I think we all do. I mean, wasn't great. Wasn't bad. I've seen worse throws. This wasn't quite Will Howard at the NFL Combine, who, in case you didn't know, the national champion quarterback at Ohio State, supposedly had the worst NFL combine performance of all time because he was incredibly inaccurate, like he was a stormtrooper in Star Wars, you know? Well, you always wonder what kind of equipment they were working with. Why did they never upgrade it to the Empire? What are you doing? What are you doing here? Can we get better guns?
Budget cuts.
Real budget cuts, right? Well, we're going over the luxury tax?
Yeah.
Tightening the belt like you're Jim Crane with these crap blasters?
And the helmet, maybe the visor on the helmet wasn't great.
It could have been that. It could have been that. But Altuve's in left. He seems excited about it. He made a nice catch. He had a bad throw. And I think this is what we're going to be doing perhaps after every game that he's out there in left. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. You can join on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join on Twitch at ESPN 975. It is the Paul Gallant Show. Have I screwed it up yet? I have not. Hell yeah. It's a start.
One segment clean.
We're one segment clean. I guarantee you, especially since I know Joe's here, I know I'm going to do it. I know I'm going to do it at some point. It'll be fun. People want a date update. Fine. I'll give you a date update. So, Friday, I went to the Chicken Shack with Vanessa. It's good to see her again. It's been a while. With my friend Eric and with a girl who I have hung out with a couple of times. We go there, and from what I understand, my friend Eric said, yeah, you were talking to Vanessa too much. But like Vanessa and I are essentially sisters, so she wasn't thrilled. And at the very end, brother and sister, you know what I'm talking about, right? Right? You know what I'm talking about? Like
that was a funny slip, though. But yes, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen, the show's back to you being a little bit more like that, too. So she wasn't thrilled about this. We go to a bar afterwards, and I'm sitting at this table, and I swear to God, have you seen Malibu's Most Wanted? I saw a caricature version of Jamie Kennedy in Malibu's Most Wanted. It was breathtaking. Pink hoodie. Pink sweatpants. Just so loud. White beanie. White guy. He was trying a little bit too hard to be B-Rat. So this guy just sits down next to me while the girl that I'm on the date with is here, and Vanessa had already left, and he just gives me his life story for 10 months. And he's like, should I call my ex-wife? Should I call my ex-wife?
And this is what Malibu's Most Wanted was?
Yeah, this Malibu's Most Wanted guy. So while this happens, she just left. The date just leaves the bar. And me, not feeling so good, blocked a couple people. I blocked her. And then, got even more dramatic, I blocked the marathon girl. I sent like one last text. And I was like, yeah, what's going on here? And then I saw marathon girl literally the next day at Chicken Shack. And that was the most awkward interaction I can remember in a while. I was like, hey, how's it going? Gave her a hug. Walked away. Fun times. So that's the date update. We've blocked a bunch of people. We are completely alone. Alas. Earwax. 713-780-3776 to call. To text, you can join on YouTube at ESPN Houston. On Twitch, at ESPN 975. So, you want to weigh in Jose Altuve in left field and some other things going on in spring training, including this promising development. We'll stick with it. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
You're listening to the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Jose Altuve's in left field now, and the news that we got from spring training today, Joe Espada, right now the plan is for him to play the majority of his games in left field. There will be the occasional days where he plays second base, but that is what Altuve will be this year. A left fielder. Still weird. Lance McCullers. He's alive! And get this, guys. This is the most substantial Lance McCullers update that we've seen in quite some time. He faced live hitters Saturday for the first time since 2023. I don't know where this falls on the chart to being back out there, because throwing to live hitters, theoretically, he should be able to throw to live hitters in a game, right? But was it more of a batting practice kind of situation where the guys weren't allowed to swing? Like, that's That's what I'm trying to figure out here. He said it's a big step for him. And now it's the volume, I guess, that's going to be the big obstacle in terms of the amount of throwing he does. I agree, especially considering he's supposedly only hitting 89 to 91 on the gun. I don't remember if McCullers ever was just delivering 99 mile per hour gas. I feel like it was more about his super filthy curveball and how far it drops than it was about, you know, just blowing people away. But he's throwing to live hitters. And I don't know why they didn't just say, like, yeah, he pitched. But nope, he's throwing to live hitters, which is the next weird step on Lance McCullers' eternal rehabilitation tour.
Yeah, are there different type of hitters than live? Like the
right
inactive hitters? Yeah, dead why dead
not,
hitters?
Exactly. Like, why not just call him a hitter?
Throwing to Moonlight Graham?
Yeah, I don't... The way that it's been described makes this hilarious to me. Obviously, to everybody else, you're like, we just want to see the guy out there. I'm seeing some jokes already. He's preparing for 2032. Maybe. Maybe. But Lance is throwing to live pitching, and Jose Altuve's in left field making one good play and then having a bad throw. The Oscars were last night. How many people watched those? I didn't. I didn't want to watch because I have only seen one of the movies that were in the Oscars, Dune 2. I think Dune 2 should have won everything. Paul, is this because it's the only movie you saw? Yes.
That'd be great if they just won every Oscar, and you're like, perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect Oscars.
Every single Oscar, if it was Dune 2, I would have been happy about it. I loved Dune 2. It was so good. I guess the movie that won, a movie that I had seen a ton of advertisements for on social media, an annoying amount, honestly, to the point where I didn't want to see it, Anora. So it won Best Picture. I looked up the plot of it. It's just a rich Russian guy who falls in love with a stripper. That's the plot of the movie. And I guess they say the F-bomb more than I do. Almost 500 times throughout the movie. Not going to lie, no interest in watching it after this. I feel like everybody that went to the Oscars, you saw, hey, Conan O'Brien. You saw John Granato. That was awesome. Wonder how he fit in there. Do you think he asked for a Coors Light and didn't provide it to him because they think it's beneath them, these Hollywood people? I mean, all these Hollywood people, they're California sober, right? Like, do they even drink? Probably all on Ozempic. And I would imagine these are just people that are smoking doobies more so than their Coors Light climb honors.
Yeah, they just have the champagne there just for, like, it seems like a thing we would have, a champagne. Yeah. If you're wearing a tuxedo, you have to have champagne.
You have to look classy. And you know, a koozie and a beer inside it doesn't look that classy with the tux. So I'm hoping John was able to find beer there at a setting like that. The Oscars do go on for a very long time. You need to, you know, keep yourself going. I'm kind of bummed out that Emilia Perez didn't win more. For those who don't know, Emilia Perez is the one with Zoe Saldana in it. So Saldana got Best Supporting Actress from it, but there's a song that went viral, and it's a song about penises and vaginas, and turning one into the other, or the other way around. And I remember seeing it, and Zoe Saldana is in the background going, yes, yes, and they're talking about all the potential changes that you can do to your parts. I thought that was actually going to win more because I wanted people to get mad about it. Because unless someone gets slapped in the face, it's just not fun to watch the Oscars. Conan O'Brien, I think he's awesome. I think he's, of all the late night TV guys, the only one that is, even though he doesn't do it anymore, still good. Conan, I listen to his podcast from time to time. Like, I enjoy Conan a lot, but I don't think he saved the Oscars. And I don't know that movies are even possible to save anymore. It's just hard to get excited for anything these days because I think you generally know that the only movies that get greenlit to be made are the ones that have ridiculous budgets because they're superhero movies, you know? And then everything else, like, would you want to go to a movie theater to watch it, or would you rather just wait for it to come out on one of the streaming apps? Because we'll probably go to Max right away and then watch it for free, or watch it for $3.99 or something like that.
Yeah, because you don't really have, like, the event-type movies that get honored at the Oscars. So, for the most part, it is movies that, like you, You only see one of these things, and it's Dune Part 2, which has no real chance of winning. You know, I think they won like some sound awards and stuff, but they have no chance winning the big ones just because apparently it just came out in March, and the Academy is just like, yeah, old stuff. We want the stuff that's come out more recently, even though, I don't know, it seemed pretty good at the time for it to just be kind of shut out. Not actually shut out, but like not – I don't think they got an acting nomination. Like, just it was only in Best Picture because they have 10 Best Picture nominations and 5 of everything else.
Right. And so it won the things it would obviously win for, which I think were like visual effects.
Yeah.
And
visual effects
sound.
And sound. Yeah.
Because the sound in that movie was
crazy.
Pretty awesome. It was worth going to see in theaters. But I mean, I thought Timothy Chalamet was incredible in Dune 2. I think he should have been nominated for Best Actor in that. I really thought he was great.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Bob Dylan movie.
I haven't either.
What people have told me is that like it's not a great like movie, but if you like Bob Dylan, you'll like it. Or it's just like a nice little they didn't say puff piece, but that's what it seems like. It seems like if it's completely dependent on me liking the artist that is being shown to me, it seems like I just have to be a fan of Bob Dylan, which I'm not. So I won't see it.
Bob Dylan, buddy. No. Yeah, like it would be funny.
I don't even know if I know any of his songs.
He has a lot of great songs.
I'm sure I've heard them, but I don't have any like. Oh yeah, that's Bobby D.
All Around the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix, originally Bob Dylan's song.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah,
I've heard the Jimi Hendrix version.
Sounds a lot different, but yeah, he's a folk. He's a folk.
Yeah,
artist.
BD in the Straight Shot.
I like him a lot, but. I also know that all musical biopics suck. They're all the same thing.
I think we're tapped out on these.
Yeah. The best musical biopic is Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story, which just makes fun of the genre. Cuz the genre every one of these movies is truly the same thing. Like there's going to be, you know, a rags to riches rise. There's going to be a couple of opportunities along the way for this guy to make the right choice or gal. They make the wrong choice. They fall in love with somebody. They break that person's heart. There's some random tragedy that happened in the past that haunts them.
Also, there's a scene where they're writing their most famous work and people are looking around the room like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Yes.
Like, where they're like, oh my God, he's doing it.
Yes. It's one of those things where you see it happen and you think to yourself, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
I've seen this all the time. Why am I watching another one of these? Because they're always the same.
But it like we said, it's a good way to get, you know, like my mom to buy a ticket to one of these movies. Like she's not going to go see The Brutalist. Chances are she's going to go see a biopic of a artist she likes. Also, I never know if it's biopic or biopic.
Me neither. I do the same thing. So
you say biopic. Will you say whichever one you're
biopic.
Saying? I'll say biopic.
You'll say biopic. It sounds like a lab experiment.
I know.
You put it like that. Sean Mapes behind the glass. I am Paul Gallant. It is the Paul Gallant Show. Joe still works with us. He is just in a different role. So it's just me again. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text. And you can join on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join on Twitch at ESPN 975. Did the Texans miss on an opportunity this weekend? We'll discuss. Stay put.
This is the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
That's the big change today. Joe still works at the company. He's doing a lot of different things, taking time away from the show, though, to be there for his family. And we're thankful that he's still a part of the station. But it is now just me. That means it does go back to becoming the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. 713-780-3776 is how you call. It's how you text. You can join on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join on Twitch at ESPN 975. I know that some people saw this happen over the weekend and probably thought to themselves, damn it, the Texans should have done this. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the trade. The San Francisco 49ers sent Deebo Samuel to the Washington Commanders for just a fifth-round pick. Samuel's due $21.7 million this season, a guy who has 20 receiving touchdowns and 20 rushing touchdowns. He's the only receiver in league history to do that. But things have been weird there with Samuel and the 49ers for the last couple of years. He asked for a trade in 2022, but they got a contract extension worked out. Last year, the 29-year-old, crazy that he's 29 already, played in just 15 games, 51 catches, which is the lowest amount of catches he's had in a year where he's played 13 games or more. He also recorded 670 receiving yards. He had 3 touchdowns, 42 rushing attempts for 136 yards and a score. All of that sounds fun, right? No Tank Dell potentially next year, maybe ever again. No Stephon Diggs, who's also rehabbing from a serious injury. 5th-round pick is all it took, should the Texans have done it. It does seem tempting, doesn't it? If it's just a 5th-round pick, I mean, what are you finding in the 5th round that's very valuable? What are you going to get that actually is an immediate contributor for you in the 5th round? Probably nothing. Every now and then you stumble into a good player in the 5th round, but the 5th, 6th, 7th rounds, those are picks that you can just essentially light on fire. Yeah, you might get the occasional good player, and if you can find a guy there, great. I mean, that might give you an entire career as a general manager, as a scout, if you're able to stumble on somebody in the draft at that point. But 5th round pick for Deebo Samuel, I think most people, if you were told about that, you would say, why didn't my team do this? 5th round pick for Deebo Samuel? Just a 5th round pick? I look at it from this perspective, though. Because I know that's how we're all thinking if you are interested in Deebo Samuel or the Texans just getting somebody to help out at wide receiver. You're thinking, why didn't they do this? You got to remember how much money that they are paying Nico Collins. And you got to consider the actual salary cap limitations of what bringing in somebody like Deebo Samuel would do. It doesn't seem like it would help you out. And I'm a big believer that the Texans do spend in free agency. It should be on an offensive lineman. More wide receivers are not going to make C.J. Stroud's life easier as much as a better offensive lineman will. And I know that there aren't as many options potentially available for the Texans now that over the weekend, the Chiefs gave the franchise tag to Trey Smith, who's a right guard for Kansas City. So that's one less guy the Texans could potentially sign in the offseason. That sucks. But I don't think that they needed to trade for Deebo Samuel. I don't. I feel like it's on C.J. Stroud to raise the level of play of the receivers around him. And I get that everyone loves their little fantasy football trade ideas, and you want to see a big splash get made. I don't think that Deebo Samuel makes the Texans better. I just don't. 713-780-3776 to call in. It's also how you text, and you can join on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join on Twitch at ESPN 975. We also saw at the NFL Combine a lot of Texas receivers running. It's a great day for 40 times, huh, Sean? I mean, sure. You definitely have to call Isaiah Bond a liar because Isaiah Bond promised he would break Xavier Worthy's 40 time of a 4-2-1.
4-2-1, okay, okay. I mean, that's a low number, Paul. Like, surely he got close.
He did get pretty close. 4-3-9, that's pretty good. But he lied. It's funny, it's a really impressive time, but he lied.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it is like a full tenth of a second
right,
slower.
But I mean, 4-2-1, insane. It's 0.2 nearly slower.
Yeah.
Sub 4.4 is good. It's very, very good.
It is very good.
But why did he say he was going to break this record? Like, this would be super impressive to everybody. Because listen, the NFL Combine, I've said this a bunch of times, it's dumb. It's dumb.
It's dumb, and it feels like it's getting dumber because the best guys don't do the 40-yard dash,
right,
or they don't throw if they're quarterbacks. Like, it seems like they're doing less and less stuff, as at least the stars of the draft are.
Correct. So I think it's dumb, but it's if you're the guy who runs a sub 440, that's awesome. This is what I'm trying to tell Isaiah Bond here. Dude, you shouldn't have said this because you would look cool if you hadn't said this before.
Yeah.
If you had just been quiet. I mean, he wasn't even the fastest Texas receiver because Matthew Golden ran a 4.29 40. So this has nothing to do with how these guys are actually going to play in the NFL. It's more, guys, don't overpromise. Just don't. Just don't.
Yeah.
You're only going to disappoint people. And this applies to everything in life. Just never overpromise anything. Don't do it. What's the benefit? If he broke Xavier Worthy's time, like talking about it before doesn't make it more impressive. It's just impressive as hell. He's fast. But then to have a good 40 time, but still be that much slower than the guy who had the best time, I don't know. I feel like it makes you seem like an a-hole teammate to your old boy. Like, I mean, Xavier Worthy played with him, and he thought he was going to do better than him. Now he looks like now he looks like he always doubted Xavier Worthy.
Isaiah Bond actually didn't play with
Xavier Worthy. At the same time?
No. Isaiah Bond transferred. This past season was his only year there.
Okay,
he lost to him at Alabama.
Damn! Well, now he lost to him again.
By 0.2 seconds, which in any other context, you lost by 0.2 seconds. It's like pretty close.
Yeah.
In the NFL Combine, it's like, nope, loser.
I know. That's a sad thing. I mean,
he ran a sub 4.4, but the problem is he promised that he'd basically run sub 4.2.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't look cool now. No. It's a shame. Gunnar Helm, does he look cool now that he ran a horrible 40 time that I could have done maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
4.93, 4.83.
Oh, yeah. You definitely.
I've run a 4.84 before. Yeah. The last time I ran it. Everyone who says they ran a 4.4, shut up. No, you didn't. You would be in the NFL. You ran a 4.6. I even think that's a stretch.
Okay.
So I know I'm fast. Like, I'm sorry. You're probably not.
You know, I ran a 4.7 back in the day.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure you did.
You said don't say you ran a 4.6.
Yeah, that's more believable. That's more believable right there. But Gunnar Helm sprained his ankle. He still ran a 4.93. I mean, that's for a big guy on a sprained ankle, that's impressive. His second time was a 4.83, but here's the cool thing that he did that Isaiah Bond should maybe learn a thing or two from. He didn't tell anybody that he got hurt. So now he seems like he's like a badass.
Yeah.
So I'm not making excuses. I sprained my ankle after false starting on the first 40 time, and I still powered through 4.93, then a 4.83, and you know what I was doing the whole time? It injured. I'm Gunnar Helm. It's a cool name.
It's just Gunnar.
I like a Gunnar better.
Yeah.
Big fan of Gunners. You know, it's one of those things where it just seems more like Scandinavian and scary and things. And I like that. So there you go, guys. That's the NFL Combine.
That's the
riveting analysis the
40-yard times from two Texas.
Three Texas guys.
Three Texas.
That's all that matters. It's the 40 times. Well, that's all anyone cares about is the 40 times.
Yeah, because like a good workout, like I don't know what that looks like. Like a good, the on-field drills, like, I don't know. All the throws look good because there's no...
No coverage, no pass rush. Right, unless you're Will Howard. I mean, Will Howard was awful, apparently. I watched some of the highlights. Yeah, he was missing everybody.
Okay. I was going to say, what does that even mean? But if you're not hitting the receivers, that's bad.
Yeah, you probably want to throw it to the receivers instead of 10 yards past them. But hey, it is not actually... The receivers he works with, so I can understand why there'd be some hiccups.
Jeremiah Smith catches that. I'm sorry.
But I guess it were all hiccups. And it does make Will Howard look, I don't know, like a crappier Kyle McCord by comparison. That's for sure. What? Kyle McCord?
I was wondering why we're singling out Will Howard aggressively.
He sucked. And he was, and you know, he's a national champion quarterback, but he sucked against Michigan, and Kyle McCord's better. So what? It's annoying that guy won the national title. It's annoying that Ohio State won. Paul, you're annoying all the time. Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is he stunk so bad against Michigan, and he wins the national title, and he's got all this help around him, and then he looks like that at the combine. What are we doing here?
Looked worse than Kyle McCord at the combine.
Oof, Kyle McCord was the star of the combine. I actually don't even know if he went. I'm assuming he did. This is the other last tidbit from the NFL scouting combine, which, you know, what's the riveting discussion you're going to have talking about 40 times, but... I need to know how Jalen Milroe grew his hand half an inch.
What?
His hand grew half an inch. I'm not kidding. Jalen Milroe has had his hand size grow by more than half an inch since the Senior Bowl.
So in like a month?
Yes. Before the Senior Bowl, it was 8 3/4 inches. After the combine, 9 3/8 inches.
Wow.
That is insane. How did he do that?
What is he doing? Could this be used in other ways? You know what I'm talking about. We all think about it. We all think about it. Okay, if you could make your hand half an inch bigger over the process of over the course of a month, what else can we make bigger? What I'm just asking the question. 713-780-3776. Just asking it. Kenny Pickett had his hands grow by an eighth of an inch from 8.5 to 8 5/8 between the combine and his pro day workout.
That's less impressive.
Brandon Allen did it as well in 2016. This one also half an inch, 8 1/8 to 8 7/8.
Half an inch makes it seem like there might have been a measurement error on one of them.
I think so.
On one of them. I don't know which one because I don't know what size his actual hands are, but the fact that they're half an inch apart. Like an eighth of an inch, I can believe that you can get an eighth of an inch. Maybe not by like actually growing it, but by like knowing a technique of how to like put your arm in there to like just eke out an eighth of an inch. Half an inch is like,
it's a lot.
Again, it takes you from under 9 inches, which is like the standard that NFL teams want out of their quarterback, to well above it.
Well above it. There are exercises that this has been discussed before that you can do to apparently make this happen. It's still impressive to have it happen
over
half
an inch. A month, I'm sure.
It's the gap from the thumb to the pinky.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I just watched that O.J. Simpson documentary, and they talk about the glove when he puts it on and how his hands were bigger that day because he wasn't taking his arthritis medication, so his hands swelled up. Like, the defense actually knew, like, hey, yeah, don't take your arthritis medication today if he takes it. He's like, whoa, my hands hurt. Well, it didn't fit,
as you see. Do you want your hands hurt? Do you want to go to prison?
So I guess your hand size is does vary a little bit.
But that's if you have arthritis.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, though, like, that's the next move, I would think. You know? Like, get some arthritis.
Yeah.
You get some arthritis, you'll have bigger hands.
You think the NFL teams will love, like, yeah, let's get an arthritic
quarterback with arthritis in his hands? Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. So there you go, guys. That's the NFL Combine. It's in the books. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. You can join us on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join us on Twitch at ESPN 975. The Rockets have a big game tonight. But unfortunately, something that has been happening far too often is still happening. What that is, you'll find out next. Stay put.
It's the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
The Rockets have a game tonight, and they're not going to have Fred VanVleet again. This sucks. Comes back from the ankle injury that kept him out for 12 games, and he re-aggravates it immediately. So now you got to wonder when he's actually going to get back out there. But it's disappointing that he won't be able to go tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Because you want to see an actual war between these two teams. You want to see if the Rockets can actually hold their own against the team that beat them in the NBA Cup. And also the team that's the best in the Western Conference. But no Fred VanVleet tonight, so definitely dampens the mood a little bit. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. We've got Chris calling in. Chris, what's up?
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call, man. I guess I hear that you're going back to just the Paul Gallant Show. So are we going to regain the tag as the most interactive
sports talk show? Yes, it is the most interactive sports talk show in Houston once again. Yes. And it was before, but now we're just going to say it a lot to rub it in everybody's face, even though it's an unprovable claim. But, Chris, what you got?
I wanted to kind of talk about what you did mention about Deebo Samuel's in last segment. I agree with you. That's the cap issue for the productivity. Didn't make sense. I'm kind of excited to see the players we do have. There's this big wide receiver. I think the one that actually took out Tank Dell, so hopefully he does that contribute. But during the Kansas City game, I think he was like 6'3", maybe 200 pounds. He was actually had like a foot up on the defender. He just dropped past like both the passes that went his way. So if you clean that up, I think that would be a good addition to kind of that Deebo Samuel, you know, Hutchinson body type. I do feel like the Texans need someone to spread the field more. So hopefully with the money we do have, we can kind of find that gadget plug-and-play kind of receiver.
It would be fun to have someone like that. Yeah, Chris, I appreciate the phone call. I think they'll be looking for someone like that in the draft, and they're going to have to nail it. They've done a pretty good job with receivers. John Metchie is one of those ones where you take a flyer on him because, hey, what he was before the torn ACL, and then, I mean, God, like, guy got cancer. Just sucks. So he might not ever be the guy that you were hoping for, but, I mean, you got Nico Collins and Tank Dell in the third round. So whatever the Patriots were not doing with Nick Caserio, where they just kept on missing and missing on wide receiver for all those years. Caserio with the Texans has been pretty damn good on that front.
They weren't listening to him.
It must have been.
It's like, shut up, Nick Caserio. Let's draft N'Keal Harry.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
Oh, God.
Chad Jackson.
Oof.
I forgot. There's like 10 other ones.
Bethel Johnson, Texas A&M legend. He had a couple of nice plays. He was super fast. Yeah, there's so many. And I mean, one of the best ones, like I think it was Malcolm Mitchell, who's a fourth-round pick. His career just ended after a really good rookie season. And I don't even really know what the reason was. The gadget player, that's something you find in the draft. I don't know if that's going to come to you. And really, the Texans should just wait. Devontae Adams is probably going to get cut. Cooper Kupp is probably going to get cut. There's a lot of veteran receivers who are probably going to get cut. Wait it out. I mean, hell, Brandon Ayuk, I bet, gets traded too, which seems like the 49ers are thinking about now, and they're paying all that money to receivers. If there was a guy to get on the 49ers for the Texans, I would say Ayuk more so than Samuel, because Ayuk, you know, was in the same offense. So I know Bobby Sloak's gone, but conceptually, it's something that he would be a fit in. He's a really good route runner, all that stuff. Ayuk would make more sense to trade for, but I think that right now there's a surplus of receivers who are about to be available, and it's actually helping teams out that don't want to trade. It's a seller's market? Buyer's market? Yeah, one of those.
Because the sellers are the teams trying to trade.
Gotcha, okay. Thank you. The cleanup aisle, me.
But I agree with the fact that, like, I'm not very interested in taking another big swing on a guy. Like, I know Deebo Samuel only got traded for a fifth-round pick, but that's because of the contract he's on.
Right.
You're still on the hook for paying him. I think it's like 20-something guaranteed going forward. So that I would like more of your wide receiver room is more Nico Collins and some role players, where it's Nico Collins being, like, obviously the best receiver on your team, and then just filling in the gaps with other guys where, hey, it's someone who's probably not going to be as talented or as good or doesn't have the resume that Stephon Diggs, who brought in last year, does, but you're asking him to fill a role that he can fill, that you're looking for the buy low wide receivers on
right.
The free agent market, mix in a rookie or two, or, you know, a young player or two. Maybe one of them is Metchie or Hutchinson, who steps back up or steps up in this year. But I think that's kind of the way you have to look at it. I don't know if you can make another big Diggs style splash.
Okay.
I don't know if you, A, can do that 2 years in a row, and B, cap wise, how that would play out.
The way it played out last year is, I think, what makes it easy. You traded a second-round pick for Diggs, and you just ended the last couple of years on the contract. And he played pretty well, but then he got hurt, and you gave up a second-round pick that you don't have anymore.
Yeah. And there is a little bit of, you know, they still need a receiver. They need to replace Diggs now, and it'd be nice to have a second-round pick to do that. So.
Yes.
There is a give and take. I think for the most part, we talked about it before, where the Stephon Diggs trade, is it a failure? It's like, well, he played well, and he was a good guy, and he just tore his ACL. So the thought of it, I don't think failed, but in reality, like, it did kind of fail.
It failed. It's no one's fault, yeah. But it was a failure. I mean, he came in.
It didn't work out.
He contributed, but he didn't contribute when you needed him to contribute through no fault of his own or Nick Caserio's. You know, he was a victim of NRG Stadium, but this time for different reasons.
Did you tear it at NRG Stadium?
I think it was at NRG Stadium, yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, not good. Not good.
Add him to the list.
Here's a list that the Texans could potentially add. How about this guy? So this guy just got released by a team that went to the Super Bowl pretty recently, okay? And he plays a position of need for the Houston Texans. Just happened. I'm, of course, talking about Bengals guard Alex Kappa. Yeah.
Whoa.
Throw a name out.
No Kappa?
No Kappa, Sean. Indeed. Now, he did lead the league in sacks, pressures, and hurries allowed.
He'll fit right in.
He did lead those. Is it possible that he's better? Is it possible that he's better
than the
guys the Texans have? You are really buying low with Alex Kappa. So the Bengals are going to cut him, and I guess he's the worst guard in the league, but he's available. He's got some of that Super Bowl champion, that AFC champion moxie.
He knows what it's like to beat the Cincinnati or the Kansas City Chiefs.
He knows what it's like to play in that game, yeah. The conference championship
he's
game.
He's like, here's how we beat the Chiefs.
Hell yeah, bro. So Alex Kappa now available. And yeah, there's a little leading the league in sacks and leading the league in pressures and leading the league in hurries thing. There's that.
Yeah, there is that.
But you're buying low. And you might get something really good out of it.
That's crazy to lead them all three. I guess it's not that crazy or terrible. And you play a lot. That's how you get there. But that's, wow.
It's very funny, too, where they describe these stories online. Cincinnati Bengals part ways with guard Alex Kappa. They've made the decision to release Alex Kappa. Why don't they just say they fired him? Why don't they say they sacked him? They're really being polite with the wording here. Yeah. Hey, he got because he stinks per these metrics.
Did someone throw in a, like, I'm sure he was a former Pro Bowler at one point. They released former Pro Bowl guard Alex Kappa.
I didn't see any. I didn't see any
to,
like
to
that.
To free up cap space, not because he sucks.
Yeah, that is, I think, what they're trying to push. Because obviously the Bengals have the T. Higgins deal to potentially make. And tomorrow is the franchise tag deadline. So they have essentially until tomorrow to determine if they're going to give him that franchise tag. Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. This is the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. You can join on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join on Twitch at ESPN 97.5. Jose Altuve is going to be the Astros left fielder the majority of this coming season, per Joe Espada. Wrong answers only. Can you think of some other potential position changes that could happen in Houston sports? Let's play with that next. Stick around. Gallant and George.